Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami
Yeah. Shri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shyamakund Radha Kunigiri Govardhan
Jai
Vrindavan Dham
Jai
Navadvip Dham
Jai
Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Gangamayi Ki
Jai
Yamunamayi Ki
Jai
Tulsi Devi Ki
Jai
Bhakti Devi Ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda
Jai
All glories to the assembled
Hare
devotees.
Krishna.
All glories to the assembled
Hare
devotees.
Krishna.
All glories to the assembled
Hare
devotees.
Krishna.
Gaur Premanande. Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Shamaniki Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Tashtati Deshitari. Welcome back, everyone. Just finding one thing. You have to be at the right angle. So. This is the end of the introduction. This is page 28 for those who have the newer edition. And I'm not sure what page for those who have the older editions, probably close to the end of the introduction. It'll be in conclusion. It's at the end of the page 28 for those who have the same edition that I do.
Oh yes, in conclusion, Bhagavad Gita.
Okay. You can hear, maybe. Just a little piece of it. Gita Shastram Idam Punyam. Oh, surprised. I thought I had the whole clip here. Yeah. All right. I'll make the point that's here anyway. Who has an old edition? I'll borrow it. Be so kind. I'll swap with you, in fact. No, I won't swap with you. In conclusion. In conclusion, Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental literature which one should read very carefully. I'm reading from the old edition. It is capable of saving one from all fear. Neha vikramanasho sti pratyabhayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. In this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. If one reads Bhagavad Gita sincerely and seriously, then all the reactions of his past deeds will not react upon him. In the last portion of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna proclaims, Sarva Dharman Pratyajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshiyasyami Masutaha. And then what you'll find is a summary of the rest of the Gita Mahatmya without any of the Sanskrit verses. They're all left out. And if I had the introduction that I thought I had here on the MP3, you would hear the introduction is the only part that we have actually on recording. That was saved. And if you listen to it, you'll hear Prabhupada reciting each of these verses from the Gita Mahatmya, which have all been left out of the old edition. You've probably also noticed that Neha Vikramanashosti is not in your edition. And the reason is because it's not the verse that Prabhupada spoke. Prabhupada said Bhayashoka Adi Varjita, which is from Gita Mahatmya, but that bhaya was enough for them to guess that maybe it was this verse. Trayate Mahato Bhayat. It has the same word bhaya in it, so they figured, well, this must be the verse. And as you know, it's not. So that's sort of the kind of thing that's happened in the first editing of Bhagavad Gita. And to be fair, there was no Sanskrit editor on hand. Maybe Pradyumna was there, but he was at that point, absolutely a newcomer, just learning the very rudiments of Sanskrit back in 1967, perhaps. So there was no Sanskrit editor, or a very, very newcomer Sanskrit editor. And so they did their best. If they didn't understand some Sanskrit, then they just cross it out and keep going. Or, make an educated guess about what it should be. And in that way they achieved what Prabhupada wanted. They came out with the book. Otherwise it could have waited 20 years while, somebody did a study and figured out what was what. But those are some of the types of things that have been corrected in the new edition. Okay. I'm not going to discuss the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. I trust that you've all read it. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on chapter 1 either, because I trust that you've read that and gone through the essential points. Of course, in the first chapter, newcomers get bewildered because there's all these big long names or unfamiliar names. But those who've read Mahabharata have more background on who all these heroes are. They're all mentioned and usually their history is described in the Mahabharata, so that when you get to the Bhagavad Gita, you know who all these people are and what their significance is. We could spend a lot of time going into that. It's quite interesting history, but we're not going to do that. You'll have to read Mahabharata on your own sometime, or watch the flick. We will look for a moment at verse 4. This is another editorial matter. I'm not going to spend all the time in the course on editorial matters, but there's a few up front. Looking at the old edition, here in this army there are many heroic bowmen, equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna. There are also great fighters like Duryodhana, Virata, and Drupada. So you'll notice the difference there is that in the old edition, there are heroic bowmen equal to Bhima and Arjuna, and then there are also these other fighters. Whereas in the new edition, these are the people who are equal to Bhima and Arjuna. This has to do with a feature of Srila Prabhupada's English. Here's what Prabhupada originally said. Here in this military arrangement, there are many heroic bowmen equally strong in fight, like Bhima and Arjuna also. There are great fighters like Duryodhana, Virata, and Drupada. So what happened there? It's all a question of where you put the period. The editor thought, strong in fight like Bhima and Arjuna. Also, there are great fighters like Duryodhana and so on. Whereas in Prabhupada's English, it was Bhima and Arjuna also. There are great fighters. So these are the great fighters who are equal to Bhima and Arjuna. But in the first edition, they came out as also Rans. Any questions about any of the things so far? Okay, pretty straightforward. In texts 21 and 22, Senior Ubrior Madhye Ratam Stapya Mechuta, we see this very nice exchange between Krishna and Arjuna, where Arjuna is ordering Krishna, pull the chariot up between the two armies. And in text 24, Krishna is doing that. You might recall, who recalls the pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Relevant here? Who recalls? Vasudev.
Lord Chaitanya, he visited Kurukshetra, I think. He saw the Brahmana reading the Bhagavad Gita. And he was crying, and he asked him what he saw.
You have to speak up because we're out here in the in the wilderness.
So Lord Chaitanya saw this illiterate Brahmana, and he asked, why are you crying? And he said, well, anytime I read the Bhagavad Gita, I see this picture appearing in my mind of Krishna, chariot, Arjuna.
The illiterate Brahmin was reading Bhagavad Gita or trying, and he was crying because he was remembering how Krishna is so kind that he's become the charioteer for his devotee. So then what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? You remind me your name?
Ashish. I think he said something to the effect of, like, you have now understood the meaning of Bhagavad Gita.
He said, you are the greatest scholar.
Yeah, you're the actual, same idea. Oh. You're the actual scholar of Bhagavad Gita. You're illiterate, but you're the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita because you've understood the essential point. In text 30, the whole first chapter is really a setup. It's like Krishna setting up this enormous drama where Arjuna is going to be pushed to the limit. He's going to be facing his own family members in the fight. And in this situation, Nachashak Nomya Vastatum Brahmativa Chame Manha Nimitani Chapashami Viparitani Kesha. Arjuna's mind is reeling. He says, I see only causes of misfortune. And Srila Prabhupada comments that he was forgetting himself on account of weakness of mind. We'll see more about that in the second chapter. And he comments, excessive attachment for material things puts a man in such a bewildering condition. Bhayam dutiya binibeshitasya. The words nimittani, viparitani are significant. When a man sees only frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Whole life gets frustrated. Everything he's tried to build up has been smashed. Then he asks himself, well, what's the meaning of my existence? Why am I here? What's the use of my life? What's going on? When you're smashed on every side, or you're put in such a situation that nothing seems to make sense, then the person may finally say. Otherwise he's cruising along, everything's fine. But when his, you know, sports car smashes into a tree and everything is ruined, and then he asks, what's the use of living? What am I doing here? Otherwise, as long as everything was fine, he was tooling down the road. So this is Krishna's mercy. He's putting Arjuna in such a difficult and perplexing situation. Any questions here so far? Okay, we're going to catch another one of those editorial things. This is text 32 through 35. Turn those little pages. 30. Arjuna says, in the old edition, why should I wish to kill them, though I may survive? O maintainer of all creatures, I'm not prepared to fight with them, even in exchange for the three worlds. So here he's saying, why should I wish to kill them, though I may survive? What's the new edition?
O maintainer of all living entities, I am not prepared to fight with them, even in exchange for the three worlds, let alone this earth.
And right before that? Why should I wish to kill them?
Why should I wish to kill them, even though they might otherwise kill me?
Even though they might otherwise kill me. As against, even though I might survive. Pretty much exactly, it's exactly the opposite, isn't it? In one you're still living, and in the other you're dead. Couldn't be more opposite than that. Prabhupada's original is, why should I wish to kill them, even though I may be killed by them? Etan nahantam ichchami natopi. Even being killed, I wouldn't wish to kill them. Gnatopi, what's the synonym? Yeah. Ichchami gnatopi. Being killed even, I wouldn't want to kill them. But in the old edition, why would I wish to kill them even though I might survive? Or just the opposite. This first chapter is important because Arjuna is giving his reasons why he shouldn't fight. First is he's just falling apart. His bow is slipping from his hand. His mind is reeling. His limbs are quivering. His mouth is drying up. That's the physical side. But now he gives his reasons. This is what Krishna is going to be speaking to, really, in the rest of the book. You can call it the Purva Paksha. Purva Paksha means the opposing argument, or the argument that you're responding to. And this gets in quite formal in Vedanta commentaries and so on. There's the Purva Paksha, which is someone's proposition. And then there's the answer to there's the response to the Purva Paksha. So here Arjuna is giving essentially his argument, his opening argument, why he shouldn't fight. The whole first chapter is really culminates in this argument, why I shouldn't fight. Now, what are some of his reasons?
Without any friends, what's the use of the kingdom?
Sorry?
Without any friends, what is the use of
the kingdom? Yeah, without your friends, what's the use of the kingdom? Why is it useless?
I don't have anybody to enjoy it with. No,
yeah. Where's the fun? Where's the enjoyment? Prabhupada said, you get a new house and you want to show it to your friends. See my new house. But if their friends are dead, then who is there to show it to? Yes.
It's a killing gurus are very often said.
Yeah. I have to kill my worshipable superiors. My guru, Dronacharya. My other superiors, Bhishma.
By killing so many men, so many women will be left unprotected, and as a result of that, unscrupulous men will take advantage and there'll be unwanted progeny.
And then what happens?
And then there's havoc.
Varnasankara, unwanted population, and from that?
Havoc.
Society goes gold.
Adharma was the start of it. And from unwanted population?
Disturbance in society.
The destruction of the nation.
Varnasha will be.
Yeah, what is that?
Kula dharma pranashanti.
Sankara narakayaiva, the whole world will become hellish. The whole world will become hellish. All the projects will be stopped. All the traditional religious principles will be lost. What is that? The kulagranam kulasyacha. It'll be bad both for the family and for those who kill the family. Patanti pitaro yesham lupta pindodaka kriya. There'll be no one to offer pinda for the ancestors, so they'll fall down. They'll be in hell. What else? Jati dharma, kula dharma, all the community projects and family welfare activities will be stopped. What else? Yes?
Essentially, the Varnashram institution begins to become compromised.
Yeah, the Varnashram goes to hell. What else? What other reasons for not fighting?
Sinful reactions.
Papam eva shreyad asman. I'll be overcome by sinful reactions if I do this. It's sinful. You don't want me to commit, how can I commit sinful activities? Greatly sinful acts, mahapapam. What else?
It's kind of related to the one that was said about killing gurus, that you're not even supposed to offer a verbal argument to your superior what to speak of killing.
Right, that's the same point. shouldn't fight with them even verbally. What to speak of shooting arrows at them? What else? Other reasons not to fight?
I think one reason is that if I killed so many kshatriyas, then there will be less number of kshatriyas, and then.
Okay.
Another student.
Hare Krishna.
Came late. Yes, a mystic power.
Some sort of discussion here? Got a friend? There are two? One's there. Where's the other?
And the other three over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we figured it out.
Okay, there you go. Okay. Some discussion is going on, but we can't understand.
Last year he did that on us.
I know, that's why I was asking which tree was there.
It's a relative of Vivida Guru. Passing stool in the assembly of Vaishnava.
Okay. So it'll lessen the number of kshatriyas?
Yeah, then he will be blamed for that killing kshatriyas.
Yeah, good argument, but Arjun doesn't make it.
Yeah, that's true.
Could have called on you, could have given him a little extra argument, yes?
I don't remember if it was mentioned about the destroying of family.
Yeah, well, that's essentially what we talked about.
Yeah.
All the family projects are going to be destroyed. Any other reasons?
Reasons that are the result of his bodily symptoms, such as burning skin. His bow is just slipping off his head.
Yeah, the first reason is I just can't do it. That's the first reason. I just can't do it. And we'll see that Srila Prabhupada thinks that's the real reason. As he says, weakness of heart. Any other reasons here? Let's take a look. First thing he says is, I don't see how any good's going to come out of it. Nacha shreyo nupashyami. No ultimate good is going to come out of this. That's the first point. Killing my kinsman. Swajanam. This keeps coming up. Swajanam, 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 swajanam. My own people. How can I kill my... The other people I could kill, you know? Outsiders, but my own people. That's too much. Then I don't want any kingdom. I don't want any this. I don't want any royal happiness. Then how will we enjoy? What pleasure will we derive? Ka priti sya janardana? What pleasure will we derive from this? We're not going to get any pleasure out of it. Why should we do it? Then, as mentioned, sin will overcome us. What gain will we get? Same thing is being said. They may not see what's wrong with it, but we know what's wrong with fighting with family members. So it's worse if we do it. How can we do it? Family tradition goes. Then there's a sequence. You'll find several times in Bhagavad Gita, this leads to this, this leads to this, this leads to this, this leads to this. So here's the first time that happens. Kill the family. Then Kula Dharma, Sanatana, the eternal family tradition, will be wiped out. And Dharma Nashte, when you kill Dharma in the family, then Adharma will flourish. When Adharma flourishes, then the women become polluted. That's another difference. First edition said corrupt. Prabhupada's word was polluted. Strong word. Women will become polluted, and when the women are polluted, then there'll be bastards. Varna Sankara. Unwanted progeny. The population of bastards. That's what they'll be. In the family tradition, the women are properly married. They follow the principles of Dharma. They're faithful, they're chaste, they're good mothers. They have good children. The family tradition goes on. But when family tradition is killed, then the women and the men have sex like cats and dogs, and families are just imagination. And no one's quite sure who's the father of this one and who's the father of that one. Or this is the first father and that's the second father. It becomes a mess. And those unwanted children, those bastards born with this mentality of sense gratification, make the whole world hellish for everyone, for those whose families have been ruined that way, and for those who've ruined it also. Forefathers fall down. Community projects are finished. He cites disciplic succession also. I've heard Anushushama. I've heard from authorities that if you do this, you go to hell. The family, those who destroy the tradition, go to hell. Or rather, those whose family traditions are destroyed, they go to hell. Finally, he says that even if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, I think that was left out of the first edition, yeah? Weapons in hand, Shastrapani, were to kill me unarmed, better, that's better. Let them kill me, I don't care. That's better than fighting with them. And then finally, he just slumps down on the chariot. Overwhelmed. Yes?
Arjuna faced the same army 3 years before in the Virat Rajya.
Mm.
So he knew that this is a war, so he's to kill. He didn't become bewildered then. Mm. But what's the cause behind this bewilderment now in this point?
When he faced the same army with Virat, he wasn't overwhelmed. Why is he overwhelmed now? Of course, Krishna's desire. It's Krishna's setup. Also, there at the in the Virat war, just he had to get rid of them. Capture the cows, save the village. Now this is the showdown. This is the knockdown, drag out, culmination fight. That was a little skirmish. You know? That was a small skirmish. Fight over some cows. Okay, get the cows back and it's okay. He didn't have to kill his grandfather for that one. He didn't have to kill his guru for that one. He didn't even have to kill his brothers for that one. Cousin brothers. But this time, everybody's lined up for a fight to the death. No, you can't just dart in and out, grab the cows and run. This is the culmination.
How could Arjuna think that it's better to be killed unarmed when, according to Kshatriya code, this is a very inglorious and cowardly deed?
But it's my family. The hell with all those codes. This is my family. You don't understand. This is my grandfather. This is my cousin. This is my guru.
I should be submissive. I should
those are ordinary. Those are ordinary codes. This is my family. I grew up with these people.
I also very compassionate source to
me. That point also. He's compassionate.
On one level, it's just glorious. Four.
The race is on.
Wow, major jumps. When they attack Lanka, imagine millions of them are coming.
Wow.
Yeah, don't underestimate the power of a monkey. Okay, the police have come.
He was blinded by family love and by his compassion.
Yeah. We see that happening in other contexts. Such as?
A new devotee comes to the movement and his parents are distraught, and they tell him how, where did they go wrong? They worked all their life to educate him, and now he's throwing it all away to be Hare Krishna.
Yeah, but I meant, good, thank you. But I meant someplace where, you know, we look and the scripture says something, but we say, yeah, but... Yeah, I mean, do we have in our, you know, in our practical experience that we see, well, yeah, this, that's what the book says, but, and then we have some other issue?
We shouldn't speak
situation of taking Kshetra Sannyas.
Huh?
There was a point where Mahaprabhu had to take Kshetra Sannyas because of his relations.
Yeah, okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because of family relation, didn't go wandering. He stayed in Puri. I'm thinking in our contemporary Krishna consciousness movement. Come on, this is what the Shastra says, but...
Prabhupada left India.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm thinking of, you know...
Bogus reasons.
No, yeah, bogus reasons. Or, you know, just overwhelmed. Where you get overwhelmed.
Being done with all this is just to a sannyasi. It's a great thing sometimes we don't.
Sometimes we think that we shouldn't do very strong preaching. We think that we have to modify the message according to circumstance so that...
Yeah,
I'll give you my example. All right, she's married, but I love her. Does that happen? You know, people who've read Bhagavad Gita hundreds of times, and they say, but we're in love. Right? And then what happens after that? Then come the, you know, actually it'll be better for our Krishna consciousness. Right? And, you know, how can you be Krishna conscious if you're not happy? And, you know, with Krishna Dasi, we're just not happy. So the first thing, you know, we can be happily situated, then we can be Krishna conscious. You know? Does that happen?
Yeah.
So what is that? Yeah, but why, you know, where does this illusion come from?
Attachment to sense objects?
Yeah. Attached to the bodily concept of life. The senses get, as you say, attached, stuck up on something, and then it's love, and then love is more important than everything. More important than the instructions of the Shastra, more important than what my guru has to say about it, more important than, you know, her husband's a 350-pound construction worker and he's going to beat the living daylights out of me. I've seen this, yes. But that's joking. You know, the mind just goes to pieces. More important than your reputation, more important. Yes. Okay, someone else wanted to say something. See, if we'd stayed in the classroom, you wouldn't be getting all this entertainment. Yes.
Could another example be, say if you're hungry, you're not near a temple, say you're in Vrindavan, you could rationalize, well, everything's prasad in Vrindavan, so.
Yeah, you rationalize it anywhere, you know. Hungry, and well, you say, anyway, Prabhupada, you know, you find something, he did something.
He drank a 7-Up on the plane.
Prabhupada drank a 7-Up on the plane, so if I have, you know, a couple of sandwiches, then what the heck? Or, you know, any more examples coming our way?
But I know our childs didn't show that example, but I just had to do it.
Yeah. Of course, here in Bhagavad Gita, at least it's got nobility to it, but I know one. Someone got involved with a young man got involved with a woman who was old enough to be his mother. And the explanation was there was no one to protect her. There was no one to protect her. You know, so in this way, the what is that called? There's an English word for it. Starts with an R.
Rationalization.
Rationalization. Your guts come first and your reasons come second. You know, your head is spinning and your mind is reeling and you don't know what you're doing. You're head over heels in Maya. And then you pull out the book and say, well, you know, the reason was that, you know, it's better for our Krishna consciousness, or that one has to adjust according to time, place, and circumstances. Or, you know, better now than later, or what will repression accomplish, or, you know, something. But the real story is that it's the mind, it's, as Prabhupada says, weakness of mind. But in that weakness of mind, we'll invent all of these things. Anything further on all this?
Well, sometimes in our movement, we take different positions according to necessity and often emergency situations, in which devotees often are not engaged according to their nature. So they get a certain duty, but it's completely against their nature, and they get burned out, fried out. We have these different terms for which often happen. So how much is it then scope for...
How much what?
Is it then scope for adjusting that situation?
There's always scope for adjusting the situation, but who's entitled to do the adjusting? I gave the example, was it this morning? After the class, somebody was asking. You know, being engaged according to our propensities. That's great to be engaged according to our propensities, but sometimes we're engaged according to need. You know, the spiritual master has something to accomplish, and he doesn't always stop to see. Now, what will make this person happy in terms of his propensities? He wants to get the job done. So he asks, you know, whatever your damn propensities are, do this.
Do the needful.
Do the needful. Exactly. As in the army. Sure, they take all the enlisted men and they try to engage them each according to their best propensities. This guy's best in this and this guy's best in that. But finally, when there's a need, they'll engage any man for any damn thing.
The Israeli army even enlists women and children.
Yeah, whatever. But the overriding thing is not your propensity, it's the need. Then what do you have to do if you're a soldier? Surrender. Right? Commander, the lieutenant told me to do it, I'm going to do it. Why? I got to. I may like it or not like it, but I got to do it. You get court-martialed or something. Yeah, shot, maybe. Extreme circumstances.
That's a code of surrender. Surrender means not my desire, but master's desire.
Yeah, that's surrender. That's discipline. Yes, sir. Yeah. What's he thinking? Oh, man, do I want to do this? No way. And what is the response? Yes, sir. So it's not only... Yes, the spiritual master tries to engage us according to our propensities, but it's sometimes, you know, what's needed. If Srila Prabhupada engaged everyone according to his propensities, the whole Krishna consciousness movement, we'd have nothing but rock musicians.
In that context, is there such a thing then as a casualty?
Yeah. Sure. Sometimes in a war, there's a casualties also. Sometimes even on the royal roads, Prabhupada says they're casualties. You're engaged according to your propensities and still you're a casualty. There's no guarantee that because you're engaged according to your beloved propensities, everything's going to be fine.
What I was thinking is probably raised the point of people getting burned out. So is that getting burned out being a casualty or is that something
else? It is being any way that you... burn out, fry out, leave.
But there's no loss or diminution in this.
Give
endeavor.
Up.
But there's no loss or diminution in this endeavor.
No, whatever you did is good. But we're sorry if someone leaves, and we do try to engage everyone suitably. But as the recruits, we have to think that it's not just about my propensities. You know, it's not. That's not why I came, just to have my favorite sort of engagement, favorite sort of work. There's a surrender here, that I have to satisfy Krishna, I have to satisfy my spiritual master. So there's more involved than just my propensities. How much propensity did Arjuna have to kill his grandfather?
But we see it's very relevant out in Namahatta and temples because we often hear this argument that oh, it's his fault because he didn't engage me according to my.
I'll tell you an extreme example where I heard it. I had one sannyasi godbrother who was here in Vrindavan, not here in Vrindavan, there in Vrindavan, nine different, and he was. One of the early devotees who came to Vrindavan, before there was a temple, before anything was really established. And he was anyway, more inclined toward hearing and chanting, and in fact getting into some pretty esoteric things. The story is fairly famous that his the servant of this sannyasi came in, and this sannyasi was sort of moving his arms like this, and kind of hopping. And the servant came in, and the sannyasi was a little embarrassed. He said something to the effect, you didn't see anything. Or anyway, he asked the sannyasi, you know, Maharaj, what were you doing? And the sannyasi said that I had it revealed to me that in my siddha-deha, in my eternal identity, I'm a peacock. So I was practicing. Anyway, I met this devotee later, and he said that Srila Prabhupada had engaged him in construction, you know, getting bricks and getting a foundation together. And he said, but Prabhupada should have known that I was more interested in hearing and chanting, and this wasn't a suitable engagement for me. So in this way, he ruined my spiritual life. He ruined my spiritual life. Now, I would look at it and say Prabhupada was trying to rescue him from his imaginative approach to Krishna consciousness. But he took it that, you know, I have my propensities, and Swamiji didn't engage me according to my propensities. Prabhupada didn't engage me that way. He engaged me in construction. That was totally unfit for construction. And he forced me to do that, and he ruined my spiritual life.
Was he still practicing to be a peacock?
No. Last time I checked in, he was practicing to be a Christian or something. or sort of a synthetic, you know, synthesis of Christianity and maybe some Vaishnavism, something. Anyway, he's doing something. But, you know, for the spiritual master or the managers to think that we should engage people in the work that they're most suited for is very good. But for each of us to think, now, I should be engaged in this sort of work, and if they're not going to engage me in that sort of work, I'm going to quit, may not be the best approach. There's something to be said for surrender. Good for us. Something else? Okay, propensities. We'll probably talk a lot about propensities in the course of the discussion.
One thing, sometimes in the temple, we see that the devotees, they manifest this weakness.
They manifest?
This weakness.
Weakness.
Of mind, you know?
Yes.
They start to don't go to the program, or maybe their service, they're not doing very nicely. So sometimes you have to engage people in service and also care of devotees and brahmacharis. Care of the
devotees. One note for everybody. I'm really a fan of speaking up. Okay. Even if you're going to say something stupid, say it loud. You know, that will be better. If you're going to make a mistake, make it loud. Even sometimes you say the wrong thing and you say it loud, and because you say it loud, people figure it must make a lot of sense. You said it so definitely with such conviction. So anyway, we're in the preaching line, we should be loud. Make your voice loud. So tell me again.
So sometimes in the temple, devotees, they manifest this weakness of mind. You know, sometimes they don't speak, but they manifest in the service. And how to deal with that when you have to engage devotees in service? Because sometimes we push too much, even with ourselves. We push too much our minds, devotees, you know, in service, and how to equilibrate.
practical tactics for engagement. Of course, you can speak the whole Bhagavad Gita at the end. Or you can speak part of Bhagavad Gita and they may say, all right, you know, give them some philosophy. That may work. Or do it yourself. By your example. They may say, well, you know, my God, the temple president's washing the pots. I guess, you know, I could wash a pot too. Or make it fun. Or offer a bribe, you know. This ladu will be yours after the pots are all clean. There are all sorts of ways of inducing people to do things. We try to make it interesting, or we try to make it challenging, or we try to make it fun, or we try to make it philosophically understood. We set an example. These are all different tactics. I don't think I'm going to get deep into tactics today, but there are a lot of different ways to approach this matter. There's humility. Humility goes a long way. Prabhu, I know that it's not your really suitable work for you, but you're the only person here, and I know that you're capable of just about anything, and if you could just do this, you know, it would really, really help us out. I don't think I could do this on my own. Flattery. Insistence, that's another tactic. Listen, just do it, okay? Yeah, I don't have time for questions. Just do it. And sometimes that works. You know, we don't have time for hand-holding and psychology in every instance and thinking about a new creative way to get a person to wash a pot. Sometimes there's the good old, because I'm telling you to do it, okay? How's that? So there's hundreds of tactics. You have to see what works. And what works in the short term and what works in the long term also. Because I told you to, may work very well in the short term, and long term it may lose people. So you have to consider. Some other question? Okay. Yes?
You spoke about this Purva Patra.
Purva Paksha.
Purva Paksha?
Yes.
So my question is it related to the Arjuna's arguments or Krishna's arguments against Arjuna's?
The Purva Paksha is what is your starting proposal, your starting proposition. And usually it's the one that we're going to defeat. Usually, in fact, that's what it is. It's the
challenge. The challenge.
Yeah, it's the challenge. It's the objection or the proposal that we have to overthrow. You know, whatever it might be. Life is meant for sense gratification, or the most important thing is to do your work. In the the most important thing is to do your duty, and other things, you know, if you do your duty, God will be pleased. You know, other things don't matter, but the most important thing is do your work. Work is worship, and so on and so on. So that's the proposal. Or, you know, Prabhupada is the initiating spiritual master of everyone. He wrote this July 9th letter. And then he did this, and he did that, and it's very clear that we're all supposed to be initiated by Prabhupada, and all the rest of these people are bogus. You know, that's your Purva Paksha, if you will.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just a saint.
Excuse me?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just a saint.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just a saint. Krishna is a great hero of Mahabharata, but you know, they later made him into God for crying out loud. But or you get really in the Vedanta discussions, you get these very sophisticated philosophical ideas. I'm just throwing out some kind of easy ISKCON examples. But you'll get very sophisticated things where you look at it and you say, gee, that looks right. Even you look at it and say, now, which side are we on? You read in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a discussion between where Sanat Kumar is speaking. And you're not quite sure, you know, which side of this are we on? Which way is the argument going? It gets very subtle. So, but Purva Paksha is the argument that comes up to begin with and starts this whole discussion. And for us, you know, maybe for the other side, they're supposed to be a parampara, and Prabhupada's supposed to have gurus who follow him, and they're supposed to, you know, for them, that's the Purva Paksha. They have to overcome that. So whatever your starting argument is, that you aim to, that you have to deal with, that you have to overcome, that's Purva Paksha. So this whole first chapter, Arjuna is giving, but what about compassion? What about respect for superiors? What about the family? What about sin? What about this? What about that? And Krishna is going to deal with these arguments as he speaks Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Maharaj, it is said that if a superior does something abominable, then they should be rejected.
If the superior does?
Something abominable or something not up to the standard, then they can be rejected by the juniors. Now, in the case of Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, they kept silent when Draupadi was being mistreated in the assembly. So
yes.
Then why still Arjuna is thinking they are my superiors and I can't fight with them?
That's Krishna's question. Why are you still thinking they're superiors? And you can't fight with them. Krishna says they've lost the respectability of superior. He says this is weakness of heart. Who else gave this argument? Similar argument. Who else gave a similar argument? Superiors and... Loud? Yeah, that's not what I was thinking of. Who else said, but they're, you know, he's a guru and we can't...
Ashwatthama?
Yes?
He was...
And? Who?
Draupadi.
Draupadi said, but he's a Brahmin. He's the son of our guru. He's like as good as our guru. Huh? How can we kill him? And his mother's already weeping over his father's death, and now you're going to kill him. And what's Prabhupada's comment about it?
This is the nature of a woman, to have a kind heart, soft heart.
Yeah, it's a womanly sentiment. In a woman, that looks good. If a woman is soft-hearted and, oh, don't kill him. And what about his family, and what about this, and what about that? That's nice. For a woman to be very soft-hearted is very good. But if you see that sort of sentiment in a man, what's it called?
Weakness
of the heart.
Weakness of heart. Another name of woman is Abola. A person who's weak by nature. Women are generally not as physically strong, and they're not, you know, when you think of strength and stamina and power and, you know, that's not womanly nature. There may be some exceptional, you know, of course, and in the movies now all the women are strong and powerful and they're all carrying swords and pistols and, you know, but by nature women are
soft-hearted and more inclined to take shelter of some powerful person. Okay, there's a Jhansi Rani now and then, but generally. So, for a woman to be soft-hearted and want to excuse everybody, that's fine, but Krishna's going to tell Arjuna that for you, this is weakness of heart. Your duty, you know, you're like a policeman. A policeman's job is not to say, oh, but what about his poor mother? If I shoot this guy, how will his mother feel? Now for the policeman, it's shoot now, ask questions later. Yeah, it's supposed to be strong.
I find it puzzling and interesting that the Draupadi, I would have expected her to be the first one to demand that he be killed, because he did nothing less than kill all her children.
You see? Still that soft-heartedness was there. And she was fiery too, but still that soft-heartedness was there. Something else.
But yet she was happy to have her hair washed in the blood of...
Yes, so there was... She was a woman, but she was the daughter of a Kshatriya. Yes?
How old was Arjuna at the time of the Buddha's speaking?
I don't know. Someone know? Suppose it depends which director is doing the casting. I don't know. New question on me. How old was Arjuna? We know how old Krishna was. Prabhupada said, what, like 120?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So roughly about that.
So you figure if he and Arjuna are contemporaries, then it's 120, roughly. That doesn't tell you very much, though, because, you know, 120 these days, he'd be, you know, 2.5 feet in the grave.
Yeah, those people lived for 1,000 years.
Yeah, those are the old days. People lived longer.
Draupadi's sons are cited as some of the great fighters in the battle. So I guess his sons were also.
Yeah, so he was a little older. Any other questions here so far? We can move ahead, huh? There's a second chapter. In the second chapter, we get going. Sanjaya uvacha tam tata kripaya vishtam ashupurna kulekshanam. Vishidantam idam bhakyam uvacha madhusudanam. Now, Krishna, Madhusudan, is going to speak. Sri Bhagavan uvacha. Kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupastitam. Anarya jushtam asvargyam akirti karamargyam. The Krishna's, here it's significant, Sri Bhagavan uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead speaks. We know the title of the book comes from Sri Bhagavan, Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna said, what Bhagavan said. And the purport is Srila Prabhupada's apology. Is everyone familiar with the use of the word apology in philosophy?
Yes. Praising?
What's an apology?
In philosophy. It's a praise. It's a praise.
Sorry?
It's a praise.
It's a phrase?
To make the apology of someone is to glorify.
No.
Say I'm sorry.
Excuse me?
If you say I'm sorry for what I did to you.
That's the usual one meaning we're familiar with. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. I deeply apologize. Yeah, that's the what we're familiar with. In philosophy, apology also has the meaning of a justification. It's a justification. So in Christian theology, there's a division called apologetics. It doesn't mean that, gee, I'm sorry for being a Christian, I didn't really mean it. rather, it means justification. Why Christian philosophy is right, why the words of Jesus should be accepted as true. Let me get up my apology. A defense, excuse, or justification in speech or writing for a cause or doctrine. That's apology. It comes from the Latin. A defense or justification. That's another meaning of apology. So here, in this purport, we find Srila Prabhupada's apology, not in the sense of being sorry, but in the sense of being certain that his use of Supreme Personality of Godhead for describing Krishna is correct. He quotes Vedanti Tattva Vidas. He quotes Ishvara Parama Krishna. He quotes Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He has an extended discussion. It begins, in fact, Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the absolute truth. So here Srila Prabhupada's take on Krishna is different from those of so many commentators. They say in so many different ways. They speak of Bhagavan, and the teacher said, Prabhupada said Krishna phobia. The teacher said, or they have some other way of putting it, the divine one or something like that. In some way to avoid coming right out and saying that Krishna is the absolute truth, Krishna is the ultimate supreme person, or in Prabhupada's terminology, Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a phrase on which Prabhupada practically built his whole campaign. He invested so much meaning, in this term, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as we read, for example, the Krishna book, subtitle? Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole book is presenting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Well, read this book and you'll find out what a Supreme Personality of God is. It's not a common phrase.
How did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur refer to Lord Krishna?
I don't know. Different ways. But I assume that Prabhupada is picking up this phrase there.
What about the Blessed Lord said and the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Well, Blessed Lord was the first edition. And
it came from where?
It came from some other edition of Bhagavad Gita. In fact, I could find it. Hold on. Of course, Prabhupada accepted it. He also, you'll hear him speaking these verses where Blessed Lord said, but it wasn't the way he did it. And on one occasion, he said something about it. Let's see.
As far as I can see in the not so bright screen and a bright... Okay. This is Prabhupada on a... Here, let me just pull this up. It'll be easier. Give me a minute. Oops. I'm in the sun, which doesn't help. This is an initiation lecture. Someone says, minimizing the authority of the scripture. Prabhupada says, yes, scriptural injunction is, scriptural injunction we should not minimize. We should not think contradictory. We should accept it as it is. Then it will be good for us. Or interpretation, scriptural interpretation is not required. Therefore, we are presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is, without any false interpretation. As it is, Krishna, Krishna, Kurukshetra, Kurukshetra, Pandavas, Pandavas. Let me just find my place here. Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, Samaveta, Yuyutsabha. Krishna Uvacha, Krishna, Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said. And we should not add here that what is called Paramatma Uvacha. No, Krishna Uvacha. Paramatma's feature. In the Gita Press edition, you will see Paramatma. They appear, they never say Krishna. They're so much afraid that if we say Krishna, he will at once capture us. So in a different way, Param Brahma, Chaitanya, like this, so many impersonal ways they will say. But that is not required. Bhagavan Uvacha means Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Sometimes they say, Blessed Lord. No. Why you say? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, said. So that was on one occasion Prabhupada's comment on it. So again, he accepted, all right, Blessed Lord, that's how it was published. But his original wording throughout the book is, Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And again, this is the first time where we find Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So far it's just Sanjaya is speaking, and Arjuna is speaking, and Krishna is pulling up the chariot. And the most he's saying is, just see, here's everybody. But now for the first time, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. This term appears for the first time in Bhagavad Gita, in this verse. And see how what Prabhupada does in his commentary. He devotes practically nearly all the commentary to explaining or justifying his use of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the translation, English translation, for Bhagavan. That he's not less than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. Any further question about that? Yes?
Maharaj, who does Godhead refer to? Or what?
Okay, this is a very interesting trying to take apart that phrase drives translators crazy. Taking it apart and putting it together again in some other language. It's what's called a set phrase. A set phrase is something that's practically not translatable. It's just words that are put together to give a particular meaning. Like head over heels is a set phrase. If you try to analyze it, it actually doesn't make sense because your head's always above your heels, isn't it? Your heels are always down there, your head's always up here, but someone says, I'm head over heels in love. It's supposed to give the idea that you're kind of tumbling, but your head's always up there. So it's a set phrase, which means a set way of saying something. And it may be there in technology, that there's a set phrase, a set way to say something, or in law, a set phrase. It's, you know, could be, they're just words put together, but they're put together in such a way that when you use that term, like freedom of speech, it's just freedom and speech,
But when you say freedom of speech in a court, there's a whole background of case law and common law and constitutional law, and before the Constitution there was the British tradition before that. So when you say freedom of speech, freedom of the press, it's not just freedom and press and freedom of and speech. The words take on a greater meaning. Take on a greater meaning, because there's a whole context surrounding them. There's a whole history surrounding them. They're imbued with a special meaning when they're used in that context. Or when we say, anyway, in law especially, there are a lot of terms like that. Premeditated. You know, when you say something's premeditated, ordinarily it just means they thought about it beforehand. You say it in context of murder, you know, it's the difference between life imprisonment and the electric chair. When you say premeditated murder, it has a very... So when you say supreme personality of Godhead, it's very interesting, you can take it apart. Godhead is a philosophical term. It means the ultimate, the...
head of gods.
Well, the etymological derivation is that this head was originally hood. There are a few words in English that are like that, where the original is head and it becomes hood. So it's originally Godhood and it becomes Godhead. So Godhead is the truth that has the characteristic of being God. Let's find it in the dictionary, since it's a dictionary kind of question. The essential being of God, the supreme being, divinity, godhood, but it's the essential being of God, or the supreme being. It's used in theology. It's not a common everyday term. How many people say, I'm going to church to offer my worship to the Godhead? It's not your ordinary pedestrian term. It's used in philosophical or theological contexts, Godhead. And I had a whole theory about that, actually, why Prabhupada said supreme personality of Godhead. I thought it was really a brilliant sort of thing, because Godhead can be conceived of impersonally, you know, to merge with the Godhead, to experience the presence of the Godhead everywhere. You know, the divinity, the Godhead, is sort of an abstract, you know, it's an abstract sort of term, the Godhead. You know, what is it? Well, it's the ultimate truth. It's the, you know, and then Prabhupada puts it together with supreme personality. So I thought, this is brilliant. It's like this impersonal term balanced off with personal, absolute personhood. So supreme personality of Godhead. You know, I thought this is brilliant. And then I heard a tape recording where one of my godbrothers, Yogeshwara Prabhu, asked Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead? Or what does this word mean, Godhead? The Prabhupada said, Godhead?
Don't do that. Just leave them whatever it is, otherwise they bite.
No, it's very poisonous.
Yeah, they just leave them. Otherwise they do things. They'll sit there and chant Hare Krishna. So... what does it mean, Godhead? And Prabhupada said, Godhead means that he is the head God.
How is the supreme person of Godhead different from supreme being?
How's one word different from another? It's not different, but it's more of a technical term. You know, if you're discussing among scholars and theologians and philosophers, then you might be more likely to use this Godhead word. If you were talking to an ordinary person, you might say supreme being. It's more of a technical term. Excuse me?
For Hindus. It's for Hindu. They have many gods.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada took it, explained it at least on that occasion. He explained Godhead as head God. But it's a technical term like, like we see a pattern on an instrument and we say, oh, that's a wave. But a scientist will say it's an oscillation. What's an oscillation? It's a wave. But it's a technical term. He'll say that he articulated his ideas. We'll say he just spoke his mind. It's the same thing, but it's a more technical, more philosophical, more sophisticated term that belongs especially in the realm of philosophy and theology. A being, you know, being is a... Any department of knowledge can talk about beings. But Godheads belongs specifically to theology and philosophy. Divinity. If you go to divinity school, you'll talk about the Godhead. Otherwise, if we're just talking among ordinary people, we'll say Supreme Being, Supreme Lord, Supreme Being, Supreme... I mean, among the impersonalists, the Supreme Absolute, the Supreme Unknowable, the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Divinity,
Supreme Light.
The Supreme Light. But Srila Prabhupada is very particular. Supreme Personality. The ultimate, there's no higher. And he's not impersonal, he's personal. There may be other features of Godhead. There, Godhead has three features. But when Krishna is speaking, when Bhagavan is speaking, it's the personality of Godhead. Godhead can be Paramatma, Godhead can be Brahma, impersonal. But when we speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's Bhagavan. So this is Prabhupada's, essentially it's Prabhupada's translation of this term, Bhagavan. Bhagavanuvat. And we see that Prabhupada makes it like the cornerstone of his philosophical campaign. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you read all Prabhupada's books and it's like almost like a drum roll, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Personality. Even the editors, you'd find there were more of them, even the editors cut them down a little bit, you know, because there's so many times that Prabhupada's saying Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada really wants to make the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
In Bhakti Shastri training, or this particular Bhakti Shastri course, how much importance is to be given to the changes of book changes, previous edition, current edition?
This is, they're not going to quiz you on this. You're not going to have to ask any questions about it. I don't think so. This is just, this is my little campaign, educational campaign. I find the students usually have questions about it, and since I've got a captive audience, and since we're talking about Bhagavad Gita, and since you're likely to meet people who are going to say, yeah, but what about, you know, why, I don't understand, or, you know, who do they think they are, or whatever. So you will be...
I used to be one of them.
You're one of them.
I used to
be. Used to be one of them.
But way now back. Way back.
Way back. Okay.
Decade back.
So you will be equipped to answer all of these questions by the time you reach the end of the course. Plus, they're interesting. I find they're interesting to see sometimes how things got to be the way they were, what Prabhupada originally said. But no, you will not be quizzed on this. You don't have to commit to memory anything about this. It's just for your own information and education and for you to share with others should the occasion
arise.
And where
do we get to know, in which chapters, what is it that Bhakti Shastri is expecting out of us? Bhakti Shastri program is expecting?
I guess that's what these books are. Tell you the truth, I'm not super, you know, I haven't assimilated all the methodology of the Bhakti Shastri way of doing things. You'll find out sitting in the class, I talk a lot, I ask a lot of questions, I'll call on you to ask your questions, and we discuss things. And that's what you'll get out of me. And if you look in the Bhakti Shastri book, I think they'll give you some idea about...
The question paper will be designed by you, or it's pre-designed?
The powers that be are going to be designing it. But my contention is, they do talk to me. And I have a couple things to say about it, usually. But my contention is that if you sit in the class and you ask your questions and you listen to the other people asking questions and you listen to my rap or discourses, depending which whether you want the sophisticated word or not, you will be prepared, and you read the book, you'll be prepared for the exam. You will not. And look at their material also. Our material. Look at the special materials prepared for the MIHE, and you know, see what they're talking about. And do all those things and you'll be okay. I think there are some homework questions which are not designed by me, which are I distance myself from, which I'm not responsible for, which you can't blame me about. But I think the homework questions will give you some idea also of what they're looking for. So I would recommend that you do the homework.
Can you help us with the homework questions? I have one question of the homework questions.
Yeah, but not today, because we've gone to 5 minutes after, and at 1 o'clock we end, and I try not to keep you all longer, because then people get fidgety and even angry. So, you know, 5 minutes is, you know, unless something's really rolling and we don't want to lose it. How about tomorrow? In the words of the sages, tomorrow is another day.
I've got an announcement for tomorrow's Parikrama, if I may.
Oh, right. Not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow's Parikrama.
Yeah.
And not day after tomorrow either, Monday.
Monday.
We're all on vacation. Okay.
So we have a Parikrama tomorrow, scheduled to go to the local Jagannath temple. So the schedule is such that all devotees, both Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Bhai Bhava, are expected to be at the temple by 10:30 a.m.
There's a new plan for the Parikrama tomorrow.
Whoa, the third
because,
change.
Yeah, because the Rasa Purnima, so we're expecting 5 lakhs of people on Bhaktisiddhanta Road, so
whoa,
we decided we wouldn't go by bus. We're going to go by boat.
Oh,
and we can all meet at Prabhupada Ghat.
Oh, it's good time.
Yeah, Prabhupada Ghat, which is opposite Prabhupada guest house, Prabhupada Bhavan, Prabhupada Ghat, the big area on the Ganga. 10 o'clock, the boat will be there, and everyone can go by boat, and we'll finish by 1 o'clock.
What's Prabhupada Bhavan?
Prabhupada Bhavan is that guest house, the pink one, just up here, on the left. It's called Prabhupada Bhavan.
Oh, yeah. Outside our...
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So opposite that is Prabhupada Ghat. And His Holiness Japa Thakur Maharaj said he'd come, and Jani Nivas and Pankajangari Prabhu said they'd come. And also we'll invite Jayad Radha Maharaj if he'd like to come for the boat trip. We'll see. But you're also all invited. And also
where are you boating to?
Jagannath Mandir, at the back of Jalangi.
Okay.
Maharaj is smiling, so looks like Maharaj might come also. And so you're all welcome. It'll be a nice Harinam and hearing about Lord Jagannath. And also we're trying to arrange prasadam. Out there they don't have cooks, but we're trying to get prasadam sent out there, so there's a good chance that we'll get lunch there also. But we're still not confirmed, but there's a good chance that we'll have lunch prasadam. So that's for tomorrow, 10 o'clock, Prabhupada Ghat. You're all invited. Please come.
If students have any questions, please direct them to the faculty or any of the secretaries like that.
Vishwa Panchaka Prasadam.
Good. Maybe bring some fruit. Yeah, or fast.
Yeah, that's good.
I like Panchak, they have the feast of the evening time.
Evening.
You have to pass the day and something
like that. I want to say, if anyone has questions like Prabhu regarding what to study, how to, what things we need to know, how will be tested at the end, and these kind of things, you can come to me.
Good. Here's our man.
I am MIHET staff, and my service is to
remind me
facilitate
your name?
Devotees with needs.
Remind me your name?
Dhani Animai. So, if you will need something, Maharaj, from MIHET or something like administrative, you can come to
okay.
me.
Okay. So this is it. I'm irresponsible. I don't take responsibility for all the wonderful things that they've developed. They're very, very, a lot of energy and thought has been put into the course materials here, into the interrogate exams and so on. So take advantage of it all, but I'm not going to give you a lot of input about that. So So for that, come to Dhaniya Nimai and get some guidance there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. You want to give this another go?
I can take it later also.
That's another one. Okay, that's then. More important things in life than this. You asked at the MIG office, they didn't know.
I'm quite sure actually that somebody took it. Shop people, I think he took it. And then putting the spice, I just put it. I mean, I put it just in a place just next to me somewhere. Not in a certain difficult place.
You would take it?
I was doing so.
I mean, it's not something you steal, but.
Not very useful. For him.
People can take anything. Anything that's worth something.
You ask the shopkeeper?
Yeah.
When he needs a rest and wants to ride.
They didn't confront him. It cannot have been banished, you know.